Back to My Garden, episode 69.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here is Dave Ledoux.
Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to a special edition of Back to My Garden. We have an incredible guest for you today, folks. Doug Oster is the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's backyard gardener and co-host of the popular radio show, The Organic Gardener, on KDKA Radio every Sunday morning. He works as a producer, a writer, and on-air talent for local PBS affiliate WQED-TV. He's hosted, produced, and wrote the one-hour special, The Gardens of Pennsylvania, for PBS, which won the Emmy for Outstanding Documentary in 2009. Holy moly. His fifth book is on sale for the holidays, The Steel City Garden, Creating a One-of-a-Kind Garden in Black and Gold, and it demonstrates how to create a beautiful garden using Pittsburgh's favorite colors. Doug's most satisfying accomplishment, though, was founding and cultivating Success, a garden program for foster and adoptive children operating in two counties near Pittsburgh. It's a pleasure to have him on the show. Doug, welcome to Back to My Garden.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening.
I'm out of breath just from the intro. This is going to be a great...
Boy, you made me sound pretty good there, Dave. I like that.
Well, you know, I want to get to know you, and our guests definitely want to hear your stories. Doug, can you take a minute or two and just share with our listeners a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
Well, that's funny. It's actually, I was 6 or 7 years old, actually hanging upside down in a maple tree at my grandmother's house. And as I hung upside down, my grandmother had basically annexed this area between two houses and turned it into her garden. And I'll just never forget watching her out there in her house coat. It had like purple piping and working on those tomatoes. And I was just intrigued. I jumped out of the tree and started hanging with my grandmother in the garden. And from there, I begged my mother to put in a vegetable garden in our backyard. And that's how it all started, you know, 6, 7 years old. I don't know what it is about it, but I fell in love with it.
You started at an early age and you had an excellent teacher in your grandmother. Very common story. I always think gardening is like golf. Nobody wakes up one day and says, I'm going to become a golfer. There's always an influencer. For those of you driving, Doug and I are going to kick back and talk about gardening here for the next 25 minutes. Please keep both hands on the wheel. If you're jogging, don't try to take notes with one thumb. I'm going to put all the links, resources on the show notes at Back to My Garden. You can follow Doug on Twitter at DOUGOSTER in the number one. And I'm going to have a link up. Doug is a popular blogger at the Post Gazette, and that's at blogs.post-gazette.com. It's called Gardening with Doug, and there'll be a link there. And tremendous resource.
I have a lot of fun doing that. You know, being an older guy, I'm 55, you know, learning social media and all that was, I just was, you know, mystified by it. But once you get rolling on it and figure out you can post whatever you want to post, I love it. You know, I posted that blog at least once a day year round. And it's just a lot of fun to talk about what's going on, even in the winter. You know, it's funny. More people might read it during the winter than the summer because they're longing after some time in the garden, and in the summer we're all working in the garden, so it all works. It's a lot of fun.
Fantastic. So you're a blogger, social media, you're a producer, you're a writer, you're an on-air talent. I'm not even sure where to start. How about we go back to when you actually started gardening as an adult? What was that first experience?
Early 80s, we bought our first house, and I just, you know, I was so thrilled to have my own place. You know, I worked on that garden for 15 years until I moved here to Pittsburgh. And, you know, with a young family, that's basically where I learned to be an organic gardener. I had, you know, the first couple of years I was planting, and I, as we all do, I learned to garden from my grandparents, my parents, and they did things, you know, the old way, and they used chemicals, and I had cabbage worms really bad. I didn't know what to do with them. I called a friend. He said, I'll just get this stuff called Seven and sprinkle it on there, and that's what I did, and I thought, wow, I stopped this invading force in my garden. But then I looked behind me, and my youngest son was just a toddler, and he was walking barefoot through the middle path looking for snow peas and walking through that, you know, Seven dust. And I was like, that doesn't seem like a very good idea to me. And I didn't know what Seven was. I don't think I wanted to know what Seven was. And I read up on it, and I was like, boy, that was my epiphany. I'm like, I'm just going to garden differently and for my kids, you know. And the funny thing is, you know, back then we got pre-internet. I went to the library and I read everything I possibly could about organic gardening. The thing that stuck out was that everybody was an organic gardener before World War II. It was something I never thought about because there were no chemical pesticides, herbicides, or fertilizers before World War II. And I thought, wow, if all those years everybody was an organic gardener before that, it's got to work for me too. And it has, you know. The proof's in the pudding, I always tell people. Check the blog out, see what I'm succeeding at and see what I'm failing at, because whether you're a chemical gardener or an organic gardener, you're always going to have both successes and failures in the garden.
Wow, fantastic. You said something very important, Doug, and you're going to win some fans. Is the listeners love to hear failure stories or struggle stories or when things don't work out perfectly, especially from experienced gardeners like yourself. Has everything you've ever planted grown? Can you look back and maybe share a humorous story about where something went terribly wrong?
Oh, there's too many to even think about, but I can think of something. But the thing I always tell people is, and I think as you start to garden and learn to garden, that basically you learn plants die. That's part of it. And once you get over that, gardening is so much more fun. When you're when you start out gardening and something dies, I always hear, oh, I have a brown thumb. Well, I always tell people the way I look at these plants dying and things not making it is it's always, oh, something must have happened to it before I got it. And if you think of it that way, it makes it so much easier when you do lose something. But there's been a million things where I've put, you know, a tree or a shrub in the wrong spot or in bad soil. That's probably the biggest mistake, especially early on, was like, okay, I want to grow, you know, a viburnum. You know, I remember one time I put in a viburnum and the soil was terrible, you know, and I it took me forever to dig the hole, and I just threw the plant in there and threw a little mulch on it. Well, it just limped along for a couple seasons, and then finally we had a real winter, and that was the end of it. If I would have put that, found a spot that was better off for that, you know, where it's all about the soil. It's all about, you know, feeding the soil as opposed to feeding the plant. I would have had much more success with that plant. And that's just, it's part of the learning process. And when that happened, I was like, I wanted to figure out what went wrong. And then through the process of reading and growing things, you learn like, well, that wasn't the smartest thing to do is put something out there in bad soil. You know, it's never going to make, well, not never, but rarely are things going to be happy if they're growing in soil that's not giving them what they need. And so that's a good lesson to learn.
You know, Doug, I have a friend in San Diego, California, who's an avid gardener, and she always says, what do you guys do up there in the winter for gardening? She would lose her mind not having four-season gardening. And I've tried to explain to them, winter months, you know, you read and you study seed catalogs and you plan. What's the winter like for you? Pittsburgh has a real winter, and you're addicted to gardening. What do you do about your gardening addiction in the winter?
Well, we're zone six, and I grow things all year long. That's one of my obsessions, is to try and grow 365 days a year. I have out in the vegetable garden right now, I'm trying to think of all the things. Kohlrabi, kale, collards, a thing called tatsoi, which is from the broccoli and kale family, which loves cold weather. Mustard greens, radishes, carrots, beets, plus a bunch of other stuff there, all under protection. I've got cold frames out there, which is basically just an unheated greenhouse out there. And then my beds, I just cover them with a little bit, just some 12-gauge wire I get from the hardware store, make hoops out of it. And I put this thing on top of that called a floating rail cover. It's a spun-bound translucent fabric that basically acts as a greenhouse. And so if I choose the right plants, plants that love cold weather, I can be harvesting all year long. You know, when we get to January, February, everything basically just freezes solid and everything goes into dormancy. But as soon as we get a thaw, as soon as things start to warm up a little bit, when that soil warms up, there's no stopping those plants. I'll harvest that stuff three or four times starting from now all the way into January, February. And we get to March, April, if the spring is right and warms up quick, those plants will all come back again. And that's my winter gardening. Plus, I'm also a windowsill gardener. I love amaryllis. I'm one of the, I think, few people left who love the smell of paper whites. Paper whites are just like kind of an annual daffodil you grow inside. And to me, it smells like spring. To other people, they cannot stand the smell of paper whites. House plants, reading. It's just, you know, you're always, we need the break in the winter. When in this climate, you work hard from March all the way through till, you know, basically November, planting and tending and watering, and you need a little bit of a break, but that doesn't last long, and then you start to long for it, and that's why it's nice to have something out in the garden. I've got a really beautiful, tall flowering kale. The variety is called Red Boar, and instead of growing like real squatty and short, it's like a tree, and it was actually first started off being introduced as a food crop. But it's so beautiful. It's deep purple and will grow 3 feet tall. And so, you know, we've had temperatures down to 12 degrees, and that kale is unprotected. It's close to the house, but it's in pots. And so we still have some color in the winter. And I've had those unprotected go all the way through winter. And since it's a biennial plant, what it'll do in the spring is you got this beautiful purple tree like plant, and then it starts putting in yellow flowers. And come on, you know, in spring you didn't do anything. You got this purple and yellow flowers. It's just finding the right plants that will survive out in the winter, basically.
Fantastic. You painted such a nice word picture. It's a perfect lead-in to your new book. I wanted you to talk a little bit about it because it's all about using color in the garden.
The Steel City Garden was my publisher's idea. He said, you know, hey, you know, people will, especially from Pittsburgh, will like black and gold. There's actually, when I started to research it, I was like, wow, there's a lot of teams that are black and gold, you know, besides the Steelers. But basically what that book became for me was an excuse to put my favorite plants in there that happened to be black and gold. There's one in there I've got to talk about that's my favorite perennial of all time, and it doesn't really have a common name, so it's hard for people to remember it. It's a Latin name. It's called Corydalis lutea. And, oh, man, this thing will start blooming. It's a perennial, starts blooming in April, and will bloom in our climate all the way through November. And it comes back year after year. It will grow in dry shade. It'll grow in full sun. The deer don't like it. It forms a little colony by throwing seeds, not from underground runners. And so it'll pop up everywhere. And that long bloom time, low maintenance, is what I need in my garden, because when it gets to June, July, and I haven't been in the garden. That's the irony of what I do. I've been writing about it. I've been, you know, writing scripts. I've been on the radio. I've been talking to gardeners, but the garden has been neglected. Well, a plant like Corydalis lutea, I can look out there the third week of June and say, oh, it looks like there's actually been a gardener out there. Those were the plants I wanted to put in the Steel City Garden, plants that I love that happen to be that color. And if you have a perennial that blooms actually longer than an annual, and you don't have to care for it, oh, that's the perfect plant for any garden.
You just hit one of my hot buttons, and that's the low maintenance part, because I'm that enthusiastic amateur stage. Help me with it, the Latin again, Corydalis lutea?
Corydalis. Corydalis is C-O-R-Y-D-A-L-I-S. And then lutea is just, that's Latin for yellow, L-U-T-E-A, lutea. Sometimes they call it yellow bleeding heart, but that's very misleading. It's not a bleeding heart. You can certainly find it through mail order sources. And here in Pittsburgh, since I talk about it relentlessly, the nurseries carry it. Once you have it, you'll always have it, but that's a good thing.
We're working on a pollinator garden and trying to get the bees in and more butterflies. Would that be a good addition to a pollinator garden?
That's probably not the best thing for a pollinator garden, but there's certainly lots of other choices. I tend bees here in my vegetable garden, and it's right in the corner of the vegetable garden, and those bees never bother me. And I'll tell you what, having your own bees in the garden makes a big difference in your pollination. So if you could also bring them in by planting things, I love plants like agastache. Sometimes they call it anise. It starts blooming in late June and goes all the way to fall, and the bees, they just love that. And there's actually a plant that's kind of gone out of favor. There's a plant called Tithonia, or Mexican sunflower, and the variety is called Torch. And this thing will, seriously, in the sun, will grow 16 feet tall, filled with 3-inch orange blossoms that the bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds can't resist. It was a 1951 All-America selection, and sometimes plants are like fashion. Sometimes they do go out of favor, and I love that plant. It's an annual late bloomer, just like me, and you throw the seeds down, or you start them, 6-8 weeks early, and you're going to have a plant that in my garden, I don't have the full sun, so it's growing 8 feet tall. I'm staking it, but just filled with flowers. Completely low maintenance. I actually left some in a cold frame when I started them. I just never got them transplanted out of there. I had to pull them out in November so I could get my, cold weather vegetable crops in there that was still going, and they were way too close together, but the plant is so prolific, it just goes, and that's a great pollinator plant.
You made me smile because you talked with joy about your vegetables, especially your cold weather vegetables. You talked with joy about some of the flowers in your garden. Was there anything that surprised you or frustrated you this season?
Oh, we had a really wet season. And when we talk about the other one of my absolute favorite things is tomatoes. And we have a great climate for tomatoes, unless we get a lot of rain. And then when we have a lot of rain, tomatoes are just prone to fungal diseases. And I've been growing tomatoes for a long, long time, and I know every trick in the book to keep them disease-free. But when it rains like it rained this season, there's no way to stop that. One little trick that I would like to tell gardeners about when it comes to planting just about anything, especially in the vegetable garden, is staggering your plantings. So my tomatoes, our frost-free season starts about May 20th. So I'll put in some tomatoes May 20th, but then I continue to plant. And believe it or not, all the way through to July 4th, I'll put in early tomatoes, like a cherry tomato or early girl, July 4th. And what that does, tomatoes love warm soil and they love warm air temperatures. So yes, we want the first tomato of the year, so we're putting some in May. But if we have a really cold, wet spring, those tomatoes that are put in May, they never really can get over that. They get early blight, they get septoria leaf spot, and they just struggle with it the whole year. It's not fatal. They put on tomatoes, but if we start staggering our plantings and give them more what they want, which is that warm temperature, soil, and air, then those plants, believe it or not, even though everything lives through the same weather from July 15th or June 15th on, the June 15th planting does better because it didn't have to live through the May 20th to June 15th cold weather. So I do that with tomatoes. I do that with cucumbers. I do that with almost every vegetable that I grow and just kind of stagger the planting because I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket then. And so when the weather is always a variable, you're going to have better luck harvesting if you do split things up. I know that might seem like a kind of a hard way to garden, like especially for beginners, you're like, I just want to put everything in, I want to mulch it, and then I'll just water it and keep it going. I don't want to have to keep planting. But if you just kind of turn your head around on it a little bit and think, well, you know what, I don't mind being out there. I don't have to put in all 50 tomato plants the same day. I'll put in some, I'll go buy some more, I'll start some seeds a little later, I'll be out there, you know, an hour here, 2 hours there, and I find that it makes my vegetable garden more of a success.
By law, I'm no longer able to force listeners to listen to these episodes, but if there's ever an episode you need to listen to, this is the one. I have my writer's cramp. I'm taking notes. I had leaf spot like crazy this year, and I called it my grade one class. We bought a tomato from a garden center, and it must have picked up a sniffle or the flu, and it just passed around my garden like a grade one kid with the giving all the other kids a cold. And man, you're dropping wisdom. That's fantastic.
That's that early fungal issues for tomatoes. There is a really great organic fungicide called Serenade. And the way it works, one of the things that we use in the garden that's kind of nasty are those chemical fungicides. The organic version, it stops the fungal spore from reproducing. And so if you know every year you put tomatoes in and you struggle with fungal issues, get the Serenade and get it on there before you start seeing signs of damage, and you'll control it pretty well. But again, as I said, if you have a real wet season and you're growing tomatoes, part of that is dealing with fungal issues. That's just the reality of it. Other things I do for tomatoes to try and keep that under control, give them lots of space between each other, mulch right away so that the spores that are in the soil can't splash up. If you ever notice on a tomato how it starts on the bottom and works its way up, what happens is those fungal spores are splashed from rain. They get onto the leaf. When the leaf stays wet for longer than 24 hours, that spore can enter the system of the plant, and it works its way from the bottom up. And so if we give them plenty of room to breathe, we get them off the ground, make sure they're growing up either on stakes or cages, and we mulch them, that goes a long way to stopping fungal issues, and grow lots of different varieties because each variety reacts differently to the disease.
You know, Doug, I just glanced at the clock and our time's rapidly whipping by.
Now we could go another hour.
Oh, I know. We could go all day and we never even scratched the surface, but this is the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions. This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with novice gardeners. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Question number one, in your opinion, what do you think stops most non-gardeners from even trying gardening?
They think they have a brown thumb, and they kind of relate it to black magic. They think that it's some kind of, you know, special power that people have to garden. And I always tell people, if you just feed the soil, if you just feed the soil first, fill it with compost, and then put the plant in, that's what gives you the green thumb. And don't start too big. That helps a lot of beginners out. Start small, always improve the soil before planting, and that'll give you the green thumb.
Fantastic. Question two, what's the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
I said it earlier, feed the soil, mm-hmm. not the plant. That was the best advice I got when I started in the 80s. I worked at a newspaper in Ohio, and the sports editor there, she was an amazing gardener, and she taught me that. She's like, listen, you've got to give the plant everything it needs, and by putting compost in the soil, that's what will give the plant everything it needs. And when I made that change in my garden, everything got better.
It's a recurring theme in your life story is you've been around great gardeners, and great gardeners create more great gardeners.
Well, here's the thing. They're everywhere. Everywhere you work, there's a person in there who has a passion for gardening that has gardened their whole life. It's just finding them. And we do find them as gardeners. They're in our workplace, and we start to figure out who's who and say, oh, yeah, I grew this, I grew that. You know, you have a table where you give stuff away. That's where you find your gardening friends.
Fantastic. Number three, social media now, the internet. I come from an era where we had to go to the library to look up answers, but now it's amazing how easy you can connect with wonderful gardeners literally all over the world. Do you have a one or two favorite gardening websites or blogs or resources you can recommend?
I do. A real great one for beginners is the National Gardening Association, and it's just garden.org. And then there's another one that's really fun that is not just for beginners, although it's great for beginners, but it's also for experienced gardeners, and it's called Savvy Gardening. And it's for gardeners that have all sorts of different specialties, and they write about those specialties, and they write about gardening, and it's in a fun way. They're really great writers and great people, and it's just a fun read, just filled with great information.
I can give a big thumbs up for Savvy Gardening. I'm acquaintances with Amy and Nikki, so they'll be thrilled that you gave them a shout-out on the show.
Well, Jessica is my radio partner, so I know Jessica. I know all of them. Nikki is awesome, too. She's one of the people that's inspired me to garden year-round, so that's a great, great site.
Oh, what a tangled little community of gardeners. Pays to be nice to everybody.
You'll find that out. It's a very small world.
Speaking of books, question number four. Do you have a particular favorite gardening book that you would suggest novices read?
Well, it's one I just got. It's really expensive. You might want to find it in the library. It's just released, but it's something that is beyond belief. It's called The Gardener's Garden, and it's basically every great garden from all over the world. And I'll tell you, from just leafing through it myself, I've got so many ideas. Painting my gnomes gold. There's a garden that has 50 gnomes that are all painted gold, and I've got a bunch of, you know, kind of beat up little plastic gnomes out there, and I was like, oh, wow, what a great idea. It's not so much of a how-to book, but, oh, boy, is it filled with just great ideas. If you just look through a picture book of gardening and jot down some ideas, you're going to find so many things in there. I love that book.
Is it like a rather large coffee table style glossy book?
You know what? The funny thing is, it's pretty big. It's just got a very plain orange cover. There's no pictures on the cover or anything. It looks like kind of an old style book, probably 11 by 14 in size, but really thick. Very expensive, but filled with great stuff.
You're giving me the freak out. I had it in my hands 3 days ago. My wife said, ooh, maybe Santa will bring this book for me for Christmas. Oh, that's a sign. I have to get it now.
It's one of the books that I'm going to talk about when I start doing my, you know, Christmas gifts for gardeners. That's going to be one of the things that I'm blown away by the book. I'm telling you, I get a lot of books sent to me. That one rose to the top real quick.
Well, here we are at question five, and there's really no right or wrong answer. It's just kind of look into your crystal ball, and it's a two-parter, Doug. Part one is there anything that you've been thinking about playing with or trying in your garden next season? And number two is, what's something that every novice should try to grow for fun next season?
Well, the first one is really complicated and hard to grow. It's wasabi.
Ooh, wasabi.
I am a wasabi fanatic. And I've always thought, I wonder if I can grow it myself. So I've been researching that. It's tough. It needs, like, moving water. And so you've got to really set something up with a pump and the whole bit. But that might be a fun thing. And then what was the second part of the question?
Every novice, what do you think they should try to grow next year for fun?
I'll tell you what. Tomatoes are the number one crop to grow because they're so easy. And I would really recommend getting some nice big tomato plants and throwing them in as a starter, because you're more than likely going to be successful with them. And when you're picking your own tomatoes, there's nothing like it. There's nothing that can compare to that. And that will send you on the path of everything else that comes out of the garden is better than you can get anywhere else, whether it's garlic, a potato, a carrot, a cabbage. It's always better when you grow it yourself. So start off with tomatoes. That's an easy, easy crop.
You know, folks, I told you this would be an incredible episode. Make sure you follow Doug on Twitter at D-O-U-G-O-S-T-E-R and the number one. I'll have a link up for Doug's amazing Gardening with Doug blog from the Post-Gazette. Check out his books. On Amazon, Doug, is that the best way to get your new book?
Yeah, that's a great place. You know, you can find, actually, you can probably get them a little cheaper now at DougOster.com. That's where I'm always discounting for the holidays, free shipping. You got tomatoes, garlic, basil. You got Grow Organic, Steel City Gardens. They're all on sale for the holidays.
Man, the time is flown.
And you get a signed copy too.
Oh, very good. You know, Doug, we're going to have you back to hear about your wasabi experience and share more wisdom. You've been a tremendous guest. I want to give you the last word to the listeners around the world today. Can you leave us with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement on our gardening adventures?
Gardening should be fun. If it's not fun, you shouldn't be doing it. If it's not fun, scale back a little bit. But it should be fun. It should be therapeutic. And if you think of it that way, it'll make your gardening life so much easier.
You've been an amazing, brilliant guest, Doug. Thanks for being on the show.
Dave, thanks for having me on the show. I enjoyed every minute of it.